Good evening. This is Jim Schwede. No, I'm joking. This is Nicholas Miller. And you.
You did it, man.
You.
Woo!
Are listening to the talking show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only.
Only.
That's right. Only. Micro broadcasting radio station dedicated to the arts.
The arts.
I'm here, as always, with Gunter, our audio tech, who doesn't speak on air. But I'm also here tonight with the inimitable and the slightly older Steve Cato.
Well, thanks for rubbing it in, Nicholas. But you know, I think what you're suggesting here is that someone may have had a birthday, but I don't think anyone here did have a birthday this week.
Right, right. Sorry.
You know?
Got a little overzealous.
Yeah. Well,
Steve's nice actually not any older than he was last episode.
I remain the same.
Steve has a very peculiar birthday, which in our current system of marking one's age acts as a kind of fountain of youth, doesn't it, Steve?
I always remain the same. I never change except for taking huge steps downwards in biological quality every 4 years. That's true. I am like that.
Yep.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of talking, did you catch that sloppy bit of talking that happened last Sunday evening on the Oscars?
Oh, God, I didn't see it live. I saw it the next day on the internet. And, wow, you know, it's like one of those situations where you're like, they have no other job at PricewaterhouseCooper, right? You know?
Yep.
They just got one thing to do.
Yep, they announced the wrong movie.
They did.
How embarrassing. Do you think it was a stunt, you know, after that Miss Universe thing that absorbed the whole news cycle for a whole week? You think the Oscars wanted to assert themselves over the Trump machine? Is that what it's come to? The entertainment industry has to just make egregious mistakes in order to occupy any of the news?
Wow, that's an elaborate conspiracy theory there, Nicholas. You know, I was just thinking that possibly, like, you know, maybe like Defend Boyle Heights is actually a false flag operation designed to alienate wealthy liberals from the poor even further than obviously the steep wall of class already has. And that, yeah, I don't know. I've been thinking about that all week, actually, that like maybe... maybe that's a conspiracy theory, but you know, nothing, you know, probably not, right? You know?
Yeah. Oh, goodness. That president, he just,
No, I know.
Not making it easy to like him.
Makes you doubt everything, too, you know?
Well, in better news.
Yeah, please. Come on.
I remember, it seemed like forever that we had a drought here in California. But that drought is certainly over, at least in the short term, wouldn't you say?
Oh, my God. I know. It's so hard to plan things. You know, one of the nice things about living in Southern California over the last little while was you could just count on the weather. You need to do something outside, it's probably going to be fine. Need to move something in a pickup truck, it'll probably be fine. Going to get there by bike? It'll be dry, you know? And now, you just don't know. You actually have to check the weather. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read somewhere that it was the seventh That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th wettest winter in LA history, or at least since, you know, they started really recording those things, early 20th century or whatnot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the good news, I mean, I haven't really enjoyed the rain, have you?
No.
Right. Well, the good news about it is that apparently they ran some tests this past week, and the air quality of the Los Angeles Basin has improved from all of the storms.
You know, I believe that. I think anecdotally, my own lived experience would support that assertion. So, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. There's a little silver lining on all those clouds.
Yeah, winter's usually the worst time for particulates in the air. But this winter, not a problem.
Huh.
Yeah. I have always been jealous of those people from San Francisco.
Yeah.
San Franciscanians.
I haven't.
I don't know what they call themselves. Bay Areaites.
Never been jealous of them.
They, you know, they get that fog that rolls in all the time and cleans out the air.
That's true, they do.
And just makes it so crisp and nice up there. Hmm. What a lovely place.
So smug. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. That's just me.
Well, it's about time to introduce our guest for tonight. Our guest is going to be talking about one of the primary materials in talking itself. Our guest tonight has what you could say is a way with words. Without any further delay, tonight here on The Talking Show, we have Neil Innes.
Oh, we do love to be beside the seaside. Ever since the 18th century, the British have flocked to the coast to enjoy the sun, the sea, and the fresh air. Nowadays, sun seekers hop on a plane to the Costa Fortune or the Isle of Asbestos. But 100 years ago, 75% of British holidays were taken in resorts like this, Southend on Sea. In the past, people didn't really have holidays as such. The word itself comes from holy day, which literally means a day for religious observance. The great British holiday didn't really take off until labour became more organised and travel more available. Thank you. Southend developed as a resort because it was close enough to London to be reached in a day by train. As its popularity increased, so did the facilities and the entertainments available. Mmm. God. I used to love this as a kid. It's funny how your tastes change.
Candy comes from the exotic Arabic word kanda, which simply means the crystallized juice of the sugar cane. Making candy is a slow process. It needs to be boiled and boiled over and over again, and then slowly evaporated. Just think of your teeth, though, all that crystallized sugar. The word licorice is derived from the Greek glycos risa, which means sweet root. And we probably get the word lollipop from a dialect word, lolly, meaning the tongue.
This is the town end of the famous South End Pier. Built in Victorian times, it's a mile and a half long, and it takes 10 minutes to get to the other end by train.
The term, to take someone for a ride, can be traced back to the notorious Chicago gangs during the 1920s. More often than not, if you were taken for a ride, it would be against your will. But I'm quite looking forward to seeing what's at the end of the line.
What? I don't believe it. The machine must be wrong. That's better. Fishermen are known for their yarns and tall tales, especially about the one that got away. And the saying to swallow something hook, line and sinker means to be someone extremely gullible because you believe everything you hear, rather like the fish that swallows not only the baited hook, but the sinker, the lead weight, and some of the line as well. This is clearly the place to be if you want to do a bit of fishing off Southend Pier. But you need all the tackle and all the rest of it, and, well, I haven't got any. I'm beginning to feel a bit like a fish out of water. And it is terribly windy. This reminds me of the great mime artist, Marcel Marceau, who used to do an act of walking against the wind. It's quite easy here. English midsummer, and the wind is gusting to gale force. It's a good job it's a healthy wind, because it's an ill wind that blows nobody any good. Enough of all this wind. I think I need something calmer, something more sedate, more relaxing.
People have always enjoyed dancing. Cave paintings from almost 20,000 years ago show people dancing around a fire in animal skins to celebrate a successful hunt. And it's still a jolly happy thing to do.
Southend Cliffs Bandstand has been hosting tea dances for the last 70 years. Take it away, Sid.
Next is a foxtrot, which is nice and relaxed. Your partners, please, for a foxtrot.
Dance is a great way of expressing how you feel, and it's something that people from all over the world love to do. As the dances become more popular, so new words from all over the world enter the English language, and sometimes vice versa.
The foxtrot is named literally because people dance with the footsteps of a fox. Tango comes from the Argentine, from a word meaning simply to dance. The samba is said to be a shortened form of sambuca, a type of dance itself, which probably in turn comes from zambapillo, meaning stupid man.
And the next dance is the rumba. Your partners, please.
I decided that I'd better polish up my dance steps for the final rumba of the afternoon.
Here am I again.
Roll brain synapses.
Rumba, by the way, is a Cuban word meaning spree or carousel party.
Time for a picnic on the beach, and I'm happy as a sandboy. Well, that's if sandboys were ever really happy. In the 19th century, sand was used to scrub and clean stone floors. And young lads, in search of an honest crust, would hawk this service from door to door. And they became known as sandboys. The rich, and those with stone floors, rather romantically perceived these lads as being carefree and without responsibility. Anyway, hence the saying, happy as a sandboy.
The word picnic comes from the French, pique-nique, and it refers to food and goodies being spread out in front of you and being able to pick what you want. Mind you, I don't think being near sand is the ideal place to eat a sandwich. And neither did John Montagu, the fourth Earl of Sandwich. He was playing cards one night, late one night, gambling,
He got very hungry, but didn't want to leave the game. So he ordered some beef between two slices of toast. And the idea caught on. Sun's going down, getting a bit nippy. I think I'd better put my cardigan on. Cardigan was named after the Earl of Cardigan, a man who led the ill-fated charge of the Light Brigade at the Crimean War. Crimea was a jolly cold place, and the soldiers were very grateful to have a long knitted jacket. It always was a practical garment and never a fashion statement. Well, I was having a picnic on the beach. Now I'm leaning on the railing of this jetty. And soon I'll be going to give this cardigan to a charity shop. For me, one of the wonderful things about language is that it can refer to the past, the present, and the future. Join me in part two to see what happens next. Oh, by the way, that was an imperative. Ah, welcome back to the present. Soon I'll be going to see Marion Hoskins, who reads the tarot cards for visitors and locals alike. I was hoping to bring her some tea leaves, but obviously tea leaves are a thing of the past. Ancient civilizations like the Greeks would consult the oracle to learn about the future. The oracle was a priest or a soothsayer, or someone qualified at looking at the stars. May I settle for Marion's good advice?
What is your birth sign?
Sagittarius.
Sagittarius, your keyword is I see. And it means you really should see into the future. Jump to it. What you want in life, go get. Career-minded, very much so, Sagittarius. I spread
the word tarot comes from the Italian tarocco and dates back to late medieval times. All readings are based upon the four elements, earth, fire, water, and air, fundamental markers of our personality and metaphors for our emotional feelings. There are 78 cards in a deck. The minor arcana, 56 cards, represents what is happening now, and the major arcana represents the reasons behind the events, the more spiritual side of life.
And we see here you have a partner, and we see that this partner will always be with you. You'll always be together. I see you moving. Are you moving?
We're moving next week.
All right, because I've got it here, and you are making a very good move.
We are.
Yeah, you should be extremely happy.
On the 22 cards of the Major Arcana, it's the first card is naught. We start off as the Fool. And then it goes through life, all the challenges, all the obstacles. Older people are not quite sure of the tarot. Younger people, I believe, like the tarot because it's like psychic counselling. Wow. You could say to me, what do you reckon? I've got two jobs to go to next week. What should I do? And we can do a spread and advise you. The cards would advise you what one to take.
Really? And you'd recommend taking the advice of the cards?
Well, that's the old saying. It's on the cards.
It's written in the cards.
Or it's a turn-up of the cards.
Whatever you believe, life is like a game of chance. So many things can go wrong, and just as many things can go right. I wonder if Lady Luck is on my side today. I've never been much of a gambler. Unlike our producer, know what it means, say no more. But I do have fond memories of bingo.
And the next game. Any line or the four corners to win. Lots and lots of lovely prizes.
When I was a lad, bingo callers used a language all of their own.
Eyes down, looking. And the first number, all the twos, two little ducks. Sweet 16, never been kissed. 8 and 8, two fat ladies. Legs, 11.
We'll hear that one.
All the sevens, crutches. 5 and 7, Heinz Varieties. Blind 40. Anybody sweating yet?
Bingo originated from a parochial game called Housey Housey, associated with parish fundraising events. With the downturn of cinemas in the 1960s, bingo became phenomenally popular. It was the next best use for an empty cinema. Unfortunately, the modern game relies solely on the caller's ability to read the numbers at a speed dictated by the computer.
White 73, yellow 26.
It somehow lost its charm.
Yellow 24, white 65, white 73.
I'm off to find a real game.
Southend has always been a popular holiday spot with Londoners, especially those born within the sound of Bow Bells. Or to be more precise, the bells of St. Mary Le Bone. I'm referring, of course, to Cockneys.
In the 16th century, the name Cockney described anyone living in London who was not part of the royal court. The word itself originates back in the days of Chaucer and comes from cockneye, meaning a cock's egg, something fanciful, trivial, and not worth the time of day. Now, on occasion, I have been known to enjoy dressing up. But clearly, the pearly kings and queens of London could teach me a thing or two.
But there's more to this than meets the eye, the Cockney sense of humour.
Pearly kings and queens are the elected leaders of London's street traders, costermongers in particular. Although they could only afford cheap clothes, they still managed to mimic royalty, who by the 19th century had developed a fashion for wearing pearls and parading in their finery through the London parks.
Oh!
The Pearlies are known for their generosity and charity. They founded the League of Hospitals, and over the years, they've raised huge sums of money for the poor.
You're shopping here regularly, isn't it?
Oh, every Thursday.
You're going to yeah. You're going to a cafe down there? Yeah, well, you get a nice banjo. That's a sandwich. Yeah. A cup of do-re-mi, see?
King Alf, Queen Mary, can you tell me something about the Cockney rhyming slang?
The slang was done to fool the police amongst the costermongers. A coster being a green apple, as you know. And a monger, a seller, hence they're like an ironmonger. They were sort of hounded, you know, and pounded. And of course, they formed this Cockney slang, like, you know, in regards to how much you want for that kettle being a watch, how much you want them groins being rings, you know, and it went on from there. Say, for instance, money wise, a Roaf was four, so that's spelt backwards, a Nevis was seven, Jack Jones, like, you know, alone or whatever it was. Say cock and hen, pony, like 25. You know, and they went on like that, and that was more or less around the race courses.
Occasionally,
Mum gets a bit of Neil and Fred, old boy. What you? We had him barefoot days.
One of old Chad's
Oi.
Dave's numbers.
Yes.
Excuse me, sir, you wouldn't happen to know any rhyming slang, would
you? Oh, you wouldn't chuckle. Yeah, I'll tell you what happened Sunday. Woke up the Uncle Ned with the old trouble and strife. Looked up, the old current mum was out, so got up, went in the cars, he had a pony and trap and pie and mash. Went into the bathroom, had a dig in the grave. And then combed me barnet, went back in the old bedroom, put me rounders on, round the houses, put on me almond rocks, me daisy roots, me daisy and girt. Went out in the hall, put on me nanny goat, opened the Rory O'Moor, went down the Frog and Toad, in the car, the jam jar, this is the jam jar, went into the old rubber dub, had myself a couple of Vera Lynn's, two pig's ears and had a good old chat with me old garden gates. How was that?
Well, thank you very much.
That's quite all right.
I'll take that as a yes, then.
Good luck, this one.
Seaside towns don't just depend on holidaymakers. Long before holidays, fishing was the reason people came to the sea. And Southend's speciality is shellfish. But we don't have to rush. We have to wait for the tide to go out.
This is a red herring, and it's very smelly. And that's why it was so effective at putting hounds off the scent. And it's been a popular figure of speech ever since, especially with politicians. Saying that he's so useless he couldn't run a whelk stall. I'm not so sure that's fair. This is pretty hard work.
Another well-known saying is to clam up, meaning to fall silent or stop talking, like a clam closing up. And to winkle out means to extract information, just like extracting a winkle with a pin. The 1940s were the heyday of the cockle industry in Southend, when you could have up to 30 or 40 men raking in cockles by hand. Their motto to keep them going was all for the love of another man's daughter. Now it's time to meet a man whose family has been fishing these waters since 1597. Tony Meddle started fishing in 1943, when he was just 13 and a half.
Well, Tony, I've just been shoveling some cockles, but you used to hand rake them. What was it like in those days?
Well, very, very hard work. 12-hour day. Couldn't get away with less than a 12-hour day. 20 minutes, half-hour break, perhaps up low water for a cup of tea and a slice of toast. But the youngsters today, they don't realise how easy it is, all mechanically, and not like it was in our days.
Well, what about when the tide's in the middle of the night?
Well, that was just the same. It didn't make any difference whatsoever.
Well, you had to be fit then.
Well, fit, and I'm fit now, despite getting on my 3 score and 10, as you can see by these photographs.
Is that you?
That is indeed me, yes.
Fine figure of a man. Still are. So there's a hand rake. Are these the baskets with the yoke?
Yes. They weighed roughly 100 weight when they was filled up.
Cool. Yeah. You wouldn't need to go to a gym then would you?
No.
Another well-known saying to do with seafood is, of course, to warm the cockles of your heart.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
But what are the cockles of your heart? Well, not only do they resemble the valve muscle in the human heart, but their scientific name is cardium, which comes from the Greek cardia, meaning heart. And that's the kind of information that, simply doesn't warm the cockles of my heart.
At this point in the day, most producers would let their presenter sit down and enjoy a hard-earned plate of cockles, warm or cold, but not mine. Oh, no.
Well, that's about it from Away With Words in Southend-on-Sea. I hope we've warmed the cockles of your heart. I've certainly enjoyed meeting everyone here, except for the red herring, of course. Struth, what a nasty nip. So, until next time, it's toodle-pip from me, and away with words! I don't know what the fuss is about, really.
Get away now, away with words. Words like we say each and every day. Away with words. What's in the name? What do you say? So many words at the end of the day. I talk, you talk, they talk, we all talk. Away with words. Away with words. Away.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
What do you say to that, Steve?
Well, it was very entertaining. That's what I say to that. That was very entertaining.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. That double meaning of away with words and away with words was pretty fitting for Neil's style of talking, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a comedian, right? So.
Right, right.
You know.
Now, I thought of you in particular with the bit on cardigans.
I do like to.
And then I thought of myself with the bit on sandwiches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I do really like to be able to just open up a sweater in the middle and sort of expose the chest area. That's something I really enjoy. Just saying. But yeah, you were going to say something about sandwiches. Sorry, go ahead.
Interesting to hear that the word sandwich comes from what? Oh, I forget the title. Duke of Sandwich?
The Earl.
Duke.
Earl.
Something of Sandwich.
Yeah.
Ordering a snack during a poker game. I like gambling too.
You do. It's true.
Do you think all sandwich eaters like gambling?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I'm overstepping myself a little bit, but that does feel like the logic of Neil Innes. He's a kind of materialist linguist, you know, that all these nouns spring directly from some historical origin.
Well,
I don't know. You study linguistics, Steve. What do you have to say about his method?
Well, Neil Innes is a novelty music composer. So I think he's more interested in the ways in which words are funny. And it sort of underlines his whole lighthearted approach. I don't think he is a linguist. He was in the Ruddles. He was in Monty Python's Flying Circus, basically. Like, he wasn't actually, but, you know, he was the guy who wrote the songs. So, like, the songs from The Life of Brian or whatever, those are all Neil Innes songs. So, yeah, I don't know. Back to sandwiches, I think that all sandwich eaters are gamblers because you know, when they're inside the sandwich, when you get a pre-made sandwich, you don't know what's inside. Could have, like, bugs in there or something. You don't know. So, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well put. Glad that semiotic stuff is paying its way.
Yeah.
Here on the talking show.
Jesus wept. I'm so broke right now, people. I am so broke. Help. Send help.
Yeah. No, I knew Neil would be sympathetic to our cause here
mm-hmm.
on the show,
mm-hmm.
Especially in his last little section of talking, you know, where he's telling us about bingo collars and Cockney rhymes and you know, the rich rainbow of different styles of talking that are sadly disappearing before our eyes as we only so text.
So true.
Yeah.
Well,
that is the strict goal of the talking show, is to pry these things from the gnashing teeth of history and its ceaseless movement towards a mono language of emojis.
No, it's depressing to think about.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. Well, surely we upset some viewers. Sorry.
There was some music.
So if you have any complaints, please feel free to call in on the old dog and bone. Steve will be here all night.
All night.
Here
waiting
up to answer your call and help you understand this awful situation.
Really?
That language is in today.
Totally.
You see it on the news, you hear it on the streets. It's not going anywhere, folks. But you can do something.
You can.
You can call. Call us here at 1-888-K-CHUNG.
K-CHUNG.
And we have people, interns, waiting by the phones. Sorry, waiting by the dog and bone.
The dog and
to
bone.
To take your call and take your donation.
Yeah.
Just think, one donation.
One.
One donation of $12 a month.
Just that's $12 a month.
Pennies per day.
Pennies.
Could support this lifelong project that the Talking Show has of rescuing.
That's
rescuing
right.
language for what it is.
That's right.
So don't take that risk. Don't think, oh, I'll just give my money to KUSC.
Don't
classical
do it.
Music. That needs to be salvaged. No, it's talking itself. Classical music isn't going anywhere. There are enough people with BMW supporting that.
Yeah. I mean, do you even know how good classical music sounds in a BMW?
But here on the Talking Show, with our rather small broadcast radius.
Tiny.
We need every last donation.
All of the donations. We need them all.
So please.
Please.
Get on the dog and bone.
Get on it.
Call us.
Call us.
888 K Chung. Good morning, Chinatown.
Send money.